It's time to break the silence and open up the dialogue around the topics of miscarriage and baby loss.
No more shame, no more taboo. Let's ditch it for the sake of our children.
The ones who are, the ones who will come.
And in memory of the ones who never came to be.
This is the Worst Girl Gang Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Worst Girl Gang Ever. Today we're joined in our virtual studio by Rebecca Stanley, who is an avid listener of the podcast, and she wants to come and share her story in the hope that it will help other people. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be here. It's a pleasure and an honour.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. And as we often say, how about you start by telling us how you became a part of this gang and where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So back to the beginning. So 2016, got married. I've always wanted to be a mum. My husband, I think, took a little persuading. But at the end of 2017, we start thinking about, yeah, you know, let's try and get pregnant. February 2018, we stopped being careful and we fell pregnant. We were just amazed, excited, shocked, told my mum and dad and my sister and best friend. I had sort of a few symptoms, but nothing major. I felt just really lucky and grateful, to be honest. Had the 6-week nurse checkup and the bloods. Everything was fine. And carried on with my normal life, really. I was going to the gym and running and trying to be healthy, but just looking after myself. And then the night before the 12-week scan, I had the tiniest bit of spotting. And I just thought nothing of it, because at that time in my life, I just hadn't thought about miscarriage at all. It was not on my radar. I just thought, if I feel pregnant and my pregnancy test still says pregnant, I'll be fine. And I just knew so little. Anyway, next day, went for the scan with my husband, lay on the bed, really excited. And it was just like a bullet when they said, there's no heartbeat. So it turned out to be a miscarriage, which I, again, had, you know, knew nothing about. So it's just a complete shock. We had no thought whatsoever that this would be our story. And so we went into that small room that you do, and the doctor goes through the options. It's all just a blur, to be honest. And I think that's one of the hardest things, because you don't really hear what they're saying, because you're just in a blur. Went straight home and decided to sit it out at home, really not knowing what to expect. Quite quickly ended up in agony dealing with contractions, which you kind of do at 12 weeks, and started bleeding. But I really wasn't looking after myself, and I think it's one thing I've taken away over all these years, is that I really now have to look after myself. But I ended up going into hospital with dehydration, and then I came out, continued bleeding at home, but then had to go back into hospital because the bleeding was so heavy. Ended up passing my baby in hospital the day before my birthday, and it was just a horrible time. And then on my actual birthday, they did the scan to check everything had passed, which it had, and the nurse said, oh, did you know you had a cyst on your right ovary? And I didn't. So they did blood tests just to check everything was okay, wasn't anything nasty. Thankfully, it wasn't. But either way, it was news I didn't want, and I just left feeling empty and deflated and horrible. So we had a few months off trying, and then we went away on a holiday in that September of that year to Canada, which was amazing, just some time away, me and my husband. And amazingly, we fell pregnant. It was the second time we'd actually tried. So we thought, gosh, we're lucky at this. We do get pregnant at least. It was a very anxious 12 weeks. And around 6 weeks, under the guise of checking on my cyst, I went to the hospital for a scan. And basically, the doctor said they'd seen the heartbeat and sort of said, oh, there's your little person. And I was thrilled, but I explained my concern, and the doctor said to me, if you see a heartbeat at 6 weeks, it's usually good news. And I held on to that sentence so tightly, and it's really come to be a bit of a downfall in the future. But went for another scan at 9 and 12. Everything was fine. And to be honest, it was a practically perfect pregnancy, and it has a happy ending, because our daughter, we call our little miracle, was born in June 2019, Aurora. So we were thrilled. And obviously that crazy year, maternity leave went by, COVID went by, And then in November 21, we thought we'd start trying again. We went through 3 months without falling pregnant, and I was starting to get a little worried about it, but, you know, didn't think too much of it, just tried to take the right supplements and things. And then in early February 2022, we fell pregnant and we were ecstatic. We'd planned to go for a heartbeat scan around sort of, I think it was about 8 weeks that time, but just before that, I'd started bleeding again, which was confirmed by the hospital as a miscarriage. And I was told, oh, it's just unlucky, you know, you've had two, it's very unlikely to happen again, and you hold on to that. And I did feel like it could just be bad luck, like it was before having our daughter. So after that miscarriage, we tried again, kind of without waiting, because we just thought, let's go for it. And amazingly, we got pregnant again immediately. I'd started taking baby aspirin because I thought, I'd heard of other women doing that. I thought maybe that will be the thing that will help, and it couldn't hurt. We went for a 6 week scan, saw the heartbeat, had those words in my head, it's good news. And then about 11 weeks, I started bleeding again, which was subsequently confirmed at the hospital as a miscarriage. So we're just completely devastated. And I spoke to my GP in tears a number of times saying, I've had three miscarriages. They're not consecutive, but I've had three. Can you do anything to help? And they said, oh, we can't at the minute because you've only had two consecutive. But I'm sure next time it will be fine. Keep trying. So I suppose at this point, I decided to take matters into my own hands a bit and just doing loads of research online. I first started listening to a podcast called Miscarriage Hope Death, run by an American lady, which I found a lot of solace in. And I started realizing that I wasn't alone. And I took, you know, I've always enjoyed running and walking, taking long walks in the woods just to stay sane, really. And at this point, I requested thyroid testing from my GP, because I'd heard actually a thyroid level can have an impact on pregnancy. So they said, oh, it was an acceptable level. So I kind of left it at that, had to trust them, thought no more of it. I saw a private gynecologist about my cyst, and she said, oh, it wouldn't have any bearing on the miscarriage, so don't worry about it. But she recommended some other drugs to take should I fall pregnant again. So we waited a few more months of period cycles, and then we tried again in August 22, and we fell pregnant that month. And we were thrilled, obviously, and I just knew in my heart this will be the one. It's prescribed progesterone pessaries by the gynae, started taking those along with the baby aspirin. And I just thought, oh, this is all we need to get us through. I went for the 6 week scan again, saw the heartbeat. Baby was measuring a bit small, but perfectly fine. But I think at this point, I started getting extremely paranoid about the chance of seeing blood when I went to the toilet. So I started only going to the toilet in the dark and weeing in the shower, so I didn't have to see blood on the paper. And I'm sure other people can relate to it, but I just became super triggered by it. And I still am now a bit, to be honest. But I'd go for walks and runs in the woods and have a wee in the bush so I didn't have to wipe and drip dry, and so I didn't have to see anything. Because I felt like if I didn't see blood, I must still be pregnant. And sure enough, at just before 12 weeks, I started bleeding, and I just knew again it was what was happening. And I began miscarrying on Halloween 2022 after taking my daughter trick-or-treating and putting on a brave face. And I spoke to the doctor, and they said if I could collect my baby and bring it into the hospital, they'd do testing. But I just couldn't do it at that time because I wasn't really prepared for what I needed to do. So I miscarried at home into the toilet as previously. And I think it hit me very hard, that one, because I'd really hoped and prayed to have my babies before I was 40. And this baby was like my last chance to do so. So it felt very poignant. Any time after that, I'd be sort of over 40, which doesn't matter. And to be honest, I wasn't particularly worried about age because I felt very fit and very healthy. But I really felt society was against me on it. And you always hear, oh, well, when you get to this age. And to be honest, I know that's bullshit because I know people who are very young having problems and people who are much older having no problems. So honestly, we're all different. And that is more the truth. Anyway, I spoke to my GP.
Rebecca, at this point you'd had three losses after your daughter.
Three consecutive.
So now were they going to start testing?
Yeah. So the GP referred me to the specialist team. They said I'd have to wait about 8 weeks, which I reluctantly took on board, but I know you have to wait and that's fine. So I did, however, go to a different private doctor to get my thyroid rechecked, which I was then waiting for the results while we went on a holiday to South Africa to visit family, which was a tough holiday because we'd hoped to share our pregnancy news with our family and it wasn't to be. And my sister-in-law has three young, beautiful children, and it just made me feel really inadequate, even though, you know, she's amazing and I never think badly of her, but it was just quite triggering. But the break was good for us. And I think it was around then I started listening to your podcast. Also some others, the Big Fat Negative fertility podcast, just to really soak up as much as I could. And I just listened as much as I could to like feel better, really. And while I was on holiday, I actually got my thyroid results and my TSH was super high. And they recommended I go on medication immediately. And I came back and checked with my GP and also checked my results from earlier in the year that were also really high. Now I knew what the numbers would be. And I was thinking, well, why didn't they put me on medication? But the GP refused to put me on medication. And I pleaded and cried with her on the phone saying, I think this could be contributing to my miscarriages. And she just refused and said, I've been doing too much online research. So not to think that I knew more than her, but I went ahead and sought a prescription privately and got my prescription. So I started taking levothyroxine in December 22. And I just started trying to improve my lifestyle, my work-life balance, doing some intermittent fasting, trying to cut out processed food, just anything I could really. And then at the end of January this year, I had my first appointment with the recurrent miscarriage clinic. And I put so much hope on that appointment and just had waited for the day to come. I saw a male doctor and he sort of whizzed through my history in about 2 minutes and then scanned me. And he noted my now large cyst on my right ovary and said, oh, yes, you know, it hurts, doesn't it? And sort of gave it another push and it felt like that. And I was thinking, this is not really what I expected from this appointment. But he did say he'd book me in for an operation to remove the cyst, which I was relieved about, and he did do a raft of bloods, which also I was relieved about. So I kind of, it wasn't a great appointment, but I felt like something was happening. But then after that, I heard nothing at all, and I started wondering what my bloods were and if anything was wrong. And I, to be honest, I started getting a bit annoyed, and I phoned them up and said, look, I want to know where I'm at, what's going on. So I got a phone call appointment with him and ended up having it in a petrol station on the way home from work. And he just said, oh, your bloods are fine. And I thought, oh, I was quite relieved, but also confused. And we talked for a bit more. And then he said, oh, your AMH level was bad, though. Out of nowhere, with sort of no prior warning and no sort of real advice as to what to do. And I was crying and sort of said, but, oh, I can still get pregnant, can I? And he said, oh, yes, yes.
Just for those of listeners who don't know, what is your AMH level?
Well, it's basically, I don't, probably the science of it, I don't know, but I think it's a marker of your kind of your egg. Well, it's sort of, I don't think it says egg quality, but the amount, I suppose, of reserve and whether, I think as you get older, it gets lower naturally, but some people have a low level anyway, and then they may need some assistance in terms of getting pregnant. So mine was fairly low for my age. I suppose it meant a less chance of getting pregnant, even though I had been getting pregnant. So it was just a bit of a knock, really, and just felt like a hurdle to get over.
I mean, how did that all feel?
I felt so
being told there's nothing wrong. There's nothing. When they say there's nothing wrong, you're like, oh, yay, brilliant, yeah, there's nothing
exactly.
wrong. But that also means there's nothing we can do. We can't change this. We can't make it better.
Yeah.
Then you have the added knock of your egg reserves low as well.
Yeah. I was just devastated. And I think at this point, I just felt more empowered than ever to just fight for myself and get there. Because I knew that I had a lot of reserve in me to get through this and to get some help or to, you know, get a bit further down this process. And I didn't really feel fully supported in that moment, but I knew I had to do something. So I had a discussion with my husband as to whether he would be open to try an IVF. And he was supportive. So we decided to research clinics, and then we registered one with one in central London, and they recommended 3 rounds of egg collection with genetic testing. So we began the sort of initial process of the scans and the bloods, and I was kind of relieved to be doing something. It just felt good. And but the IVF clinic said they wouldn't want to carry on until I'd had my cyst removed, because it was quite large at that stage and it was kind of blocking the right ovary, and they wouldn't be able to get to it for a collection. So I understood that. My husband was tested as well for the first time in all of this, and luckily his sperm was okay, so that was good. I started fertility acupuncture and reflexology, which I found hugely beneficial, but still no news on the operation. So I phoned the hospital and I just tried to see if there was any cancellation or opening. And amazingly, they had a date that I could step into. So the date was around the 20th of April this year. So I went for my pre-op bloods and gearing up for it. And then my period never came and I was pregnant. And I couldn't believe it, because I thought, oh, I've got this far and got the operation and now we have to cancel it, because they won't do it, obviously, if I was pregnant. But I thought at the same time, surely this is the one. This has got to be the one. I registered with a GP early, expressed my nerves. Obviously, they were great, though, and they did prescribe me progesterone, blood thinners. No particular reason for these, but I think they were just trying to be careful. Baby aspirin, they booked me in with the early pregnancy unit. I went for the 6-week scan at the hospital. Everything looked great. It was a brilliant day.
At this point, had you kind of lost all faith in that first 6-week scan being?
In a way, yeah. But it was still nice to see a heartbeat, and it still gave me a bit of hope, I suppose. It was coming up to my 40th, but I kind of didn't mind because I was pregnant and everything was going all right and my thyroid level was better and I was on the meds. I thought everything that I need is here. My NCT friend got pregnant as well and I was delighted, and we were going to have our second babies together, which was exciting. Then a few days before the 12-week scan, I started bleeding, and it took everything to retain any hope, because I just knew. Booked an urgent private scan, and my husband was away recording because he's a musician, so I had to go on my own. And I explained my history to the sonographer, and she sort of put her hands on her hips and said, oh dear. And it was almost like I was being told off at school. And I've come to realize that because I can present quite strong in and quite sort of level-headed, I suppose, in a scan scenario, and doctors almost react to me as though I'm fine when I'm not. And I think sometimes medical professionals need to think of that, because even if you're not on the floor in bits, like you can be going through it in a different way, and we deserve just the same amount of sympathy. Sadly there was no heartbeat, and I started miscarrying my fifth baby. And it was like a really hot time in June, but it was just such a dark time. Mm. And the hospital asked me to try and again bring in the baby for testing, which I amazingly managed to do with the help of my husband and parents, like looking after my daughter and me sort of going in and out of the bathroom in agony and, you know, collecting the baby and the pregnancy sac. And so took it to the hospital and they sent it off for analysis, and we were told to wait a few weeks, and then actually they said no, it's probably more likely to be a few months. So we tried to sort of put it to the back of our minds. I then sort of called the recurrent miscarriage clinic to explain what had happened and got a phone appointment, and really was kind of told, well, now you've had 5 miscarriages and you are over 40, so you know there's not loads of hope. And it was just a horrible conversation, and I just sort of gave up then and there of seeking help via that route, because I just thought, this is not helping me. So I think I just had to have my own plan to move forward. So I re-registered with the IVF clinic and got the ball rolling again. And I just tried to take care of myself, but I was in a complete blur. I started having some therapy, which was great. I also joined the Miscarriage Association support groups on Zoom, which were really, really helpful. It's a very sad place where people obviously sharing very dark times, but it was really helpful to be around those people at that time. And I also did some research into getting the cyst removed privately because I do have some work health insurance, which I know I'm extremely lucky to have. And amazingly, I managed to get that operation booked in early July. And so the cyst removal was completed. And the doctor was just the most incredible lady. And she took such great care and she filled me with so much hope. And it was really the first time that I sort of felt really listened to and cared for. And, you know, she was just saying, everything looks really good down there. And I have great hope that things will be okay in the future. And it's all I needed. And I knew I don't need a doctor to tell me, no, it's definitely going to happen or it's definitely not going to happen. But just someone to give you some hope is amazing in that moment. So yeah, I started also doing some lymphatic drainage massage to assist with the post-op, which really made me feel good as well. And then a few weeks after that, we had the scan with the IVF clinic to just check on everything, and everything looked great. I'd healed really well from the op, so I was kind of ready to start. So we commenced our first round of IVF egg collection in August this year. And whilst we were just prepping for that, we got our results through from the hospital about the baby we'd miscarried in June, and it was confirmed that the baby was a girl and had trisomy 15 and 21 chromosomal abnormalities. So that was basically they confirmed the reason for the miscarriage, which was extremely sad but good to know in a way. And I feel like the other miscarriages may be the same, so in my heart that's what I think about it. They also recommended we do carrier type blood testing, as it was suspected we or I may be a carrier of a balanced translocation, which passes through to my eggs, and which is why I may have had so many miscarriages. And again, this is all stuff I'd sort of only really heard about on podcasts and never sort of heard about via a GP or anything. So it was just the world was opening up of the possibilities of what had happened. And it was just, you know, good to know that we were going to be tested. So yeah, the first round of IVF went well. I was fine, really. I did all my injections myself. It was a short protocol. The egg retrieval procedure went well. We didn't come out with loads of eggs, but we did have six that fertilized and one embryo made it to day six, which was great. Then we took a month off between rounds, and end of October, we did our second round. So yeah, that one was a bit tricky. The ovary, one of the ovaries wasn't playing ball, and it sort of grew a kind of large empty follicle or cyst and nothing else. And the other ovary had quite a few follicles. So we carried on anyway, and we ended up with three fertilized embryos and one again that made it to day six. And we then had one more round, which is due in January, but we decided to proceed with genetic testing after the two, just to see how the embryos looked, you know, following testing. And we've just had the results back recently, and one sadly had a chromosomal abnormality, but the other one looks perfect. So we're very, very relieved about that. And we will have our third round in January and hopefully get one more embryo, but you never know. And then we'd look forward to hopefully a transfer in February or March. But yeah, it's sorry, I whizzed through all of that, but that is where we're at now. But it's just been such a huge learning curve. And I've met so many amazing people sort of through it, that I think I've just started really being open about talking about it, because I feel like connections can be made and people can be helped and people feel less alone. And that's why it's amazing what you guys do, because it really, really helps people in their darkest times. And I think also I've really felt that I've learned to be empowered for myself, because sometimes you get an answer that you just question or you just don't accept. And it's absolutely within your rights to try and find another answer or some way around something. And it's not easy for everyone to do. And when you're feeling low, it's particularly hard. But, you know, I feel empowered to fight for myself. And I'm grateful that I have. And I think it's also meant that although this time has been particularly horrible, I feel like I carry my five babies with me, and I feel like they're willing me on to get through to the next stage of life. And I feel, you know, they're helping me to look after myself, because that's another takeaway. It's just, it's like we don't always look after ourselves and we put ourselves last. And this has made me have to think about my sleep. It's made me have to think about, you know, my thyroid. It's made me have to think about my diet and, you know, just taking time out. And sometimes I say to my husband, I just need to go out for a walk and I'll have to go and I'll go and do it. And I don't feel bad about that anymore. And those things are really important when you're going through this.
So, the warriorship, we wanted to come and tell you a little bit about it, didn't we, Bex?
And in case you're already going, why? We don't want to know about a fucking ship. The warriorship is our online membership for warriors in this community.
It's packed full of stuff. So we just want to tell you about some of the stuff. All of the content from all of the courses that we ever run is in the warriorship. So there's loads to get your teeth into.
And we are also developing modules for what happens after.
But not only that, we've also got a ton of educational workshops running once a month. In the coming months, we have got body positivity workshop, gratitude workshop, and loads more.
And on top of that, we also have a resident mental health specialist. And on top of that, as if that wasn't enough, there's 13 events every month. And there's stuff popping up all the time as well that other people are organising that you can be a part of. So it really is thriving.
And all you have to do is head to the link in our bio or visit our website and you can be a part of this too.
We'd love to see you there. Gosh, Rebecca, you've been through so much in such a sort of relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, quite condensed, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like your level of self-awareness and your kind of ability to process and find the next step and advocate for yourself and stuff is really amazing. So, I mean, you should be so proud of yourself
Thank
for having
you.
The strength and the courage to do that, because it is hard and it's hard. Speaking to lots of people in the past and obviously chatting with Laura a lot, I mean, when you get told by someone in a professional capacity that you are too old or not in the, you know, whatever you get told, it's very difficult to take that advice and not take it in. It's very difficult to say, okay, that's your advice and that's fine. That's what you've told me. But actually, I'm going to look elsewhere, because I think I'm not sure if I was told that by someone in a professional capacity that I could not take that on and not get so far down in my own worry and anxiety that it would then prevent me from going on and forging my own path. So I've got so much admiration for you to have to hear that and then to keep going and know that actually the way you feel is the genuine and the most important thing. That's really incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's so hard not to feel knocked by age in so many ways in society as women. And I think, but what I've learned through this is that we are all so different and what's going on inside our bodies is all so different. And the most important thing is just to check who you are and, you know, we are unique, and to look at your own individual circumstances and get the right advice for you. And I think, you know, I've heard so many people over the years saying, oh, you know, I want to have my family by this time. And I always say now, you know, if you are lucky, you know, if I am lucky, I will have another baby, because it's never guaranteed. And, you know, whatever age you are, it's never guaranteed. And you can only just hope. And all you can do is try and find out as much to help your path as much as possible. You know, I would never thought that my sister would be a problem, but it would have been a problem, because I wouldn't probably have been successful with IVF getting eggs if I hadn't had it removed. And I've learned that along the way. And now, you know, say my daughter or my sister has a problem, I will tell them, go and get it checked out, you know, and your thyroid, get that checked out, and all sorts of things that I just didn't think about before that may or may not have a bearing, but it's worth looking into it. It's worth getting the answers and trying to help yourself.
And also, I think it's so worth, like, if you'd gone with the advice about your cyst, you wouldn't have done anything more about it, but it was, you felt like it needed, you know, more exploration and managing. And so you did that off your own back. And I think that is the take home here for people that's listening, is if you feel like something needs addressing, if that's how you feel and you feel that's what you push for. It's not, don't be fobbed off by other people going, oh, I'm sure you'll be fine.
No,
it's so important to fight for what you believe, because I think we all have this intuition that we learn to kind of ignore and push to the side because we feel inferior to other people when they have a higher level of education in that area. But actually, the own we're the owner, we should have authority over our own bodies and over our own thoughts and feelings. And when we feel like something's not right, we should be able to exercise that right to attention and treatment. You know, whether people try and fob us off or feel like what we're saying is not important or irrelevant, we need to keep on going. Yeah. And if you get a knockback, try not to take it on and try to go somewhere else and find someone who will listen. Because there are, I think, as important as, you know, these people who do write you off and do have a busy schedule, there are people out there who will listen and take
absolutely get another advice. Indeed.
Yeah, and those people, like the lady that you saw when you when you just said that you felt so sort of validated. You're right.
Yeah, she was amazing. Yeah.
You did know that yourself, and you had the strength of character to know that yourself. But having someone else do that for you as well is worth its weight in gold, isn't it? Because it gives you that
absolutely
knowledge that, okay, I am, what I'm saying is important, what I feel is important. Yeah. Instead
absolutely.
Of consistently knocked back and like must just end up making you feel like, oh, okay, well, is this real? Because everyone is telling me that this is not important, but I feel like it's important, but they know. Yeah. And I don't, because I don't have that level of education in this field. And it's such a mind fuck, isn't it?
It is.
You are living proof. You just got to keep on going until you find someone who's willing to give you the time that you deserve. Yeah,
exactly that. And I think what you talk about a lot on the podcast is like the fact that, you know, miscarriage itself is often just brushed off as like, oh, well, you've had a miscarriage, you know, and it's really because people don't know what we go through during it. And I'm really not afraid. I work in quite a male dominated environment, and I talk to my colleagues, male colleagues, about it. And I think it's good because it opens their eyes, and I'm not afraid of doing that. I'm not afraid of talking about something that some people might think is a bit much, but I like to be open about it because it just makes the topic more of something that's part of life, which it is. And, you know, we shouldn't feel shame or, you know, guilt about it. And I definitely have felt shame and guilt about it, as though, gosh, I've done something. This is my fault. What have I done? What could I change for next time? But I now know that that's not it at all. And people just need to be supportive and to value and to, you know, to acknowledge your experience and to give you the time that you need. And my work have actually been amazing, and I'm extremely grateful for that, because I know not all employers are. And I work for quite a big organization, and we've got a lot of networks for different things, but I'm really quite passionate about starting a sort of side hustle from the families and the parenting network of a group of people who have been through this and had to deal with it at work, because it's really, really hard. And I think there's a lot of people who'd be, you know, keen to share their stories with others who understand. So I'm trying to look into that. I'm not quite sure what form it will take, maybe just like a meetup every few months, but just something so that people know they have a place to share the story and they're not alone, because I think a lot of us sit at work going through this stuff and people don't know.
People don't know, that's right. And we're actually at the moment doing workplace webinars for that exact reason, because we spend, I don't know what percentage of our time, but a lot of our time at work. And if you can, cultivate a great community within your workplace organization, then at least we won't have to sit in that isolation at work, because it's something that seeps into all your life. And what we found is that people tend to be much more productive at work and much more able to focus on their job when they feel safe and supported in
absolutely.
That environment. And one of the things that is really challenging at work is triggers, you know, being triggered constantly. Yeah. But people don't know that they're triggering you. So if you had that awareness in your workplace, within your organization, then it could be much, much more inclusive than, because
100%
in loss. So 25% of those pregnancies don't end with a baby in our arms at home.
Exactly.
And so it's such a huge statistic that we feel that organizations need to be more aware of. And as you say, that's not just women.
It's men
as well, because we can't understand things from an emotional perspective unless we've been through it. But from an educational point of view, you know, we can teach others how to support. And that's
absolutely.
Have you heard me say that before, Laura?
A few times.
I just saw you laughing. It just rolls off the tongue.
No, you're so right, honestly. And triggers at work is a big thing. You know, because we've got so many people at work, there's obviously a lot of people who get pregnant. And And I think, you know, just around the time I was having my miscarriage in June, there was so many emails going around, let's collect for this person, sign this person's pregnancy, like, baby card. And it was so much, I had to just immediately block them. But you see the emails come in, so you think about it. And there's different ways of dealing with that, potentially. And you know, I think people just don't think about it enough. And we just need to gradually change that bit by bit.
Yeah, it's all about awareness, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't expect people to know
no
what to do and how to behave. But the more it's spoken about, hopefully, the easier it is for them to understand and just have Absolutely. That extra thought and be a bit more sensitive.
Yeah.
Rebecca, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned earlier about feelings of inadequacy. And I know that's something that I really, really struggled with. I always felt like I wasn't, you know, womanly enough, or, you know, I wasn't doing what I was put on this earth to do, to procreate, and how everyone around me was seemingly able to do it with ease. And it's something that really affected me. I just didn't feel as worthy as other people. So, you know, you mentioned those feelings with your sister-in-law. Is this something that you still feel, or have you managed to sort of shift your mindset and change the way that you feel about yourself in that respect?
I've been working on it with my therapist quite a lot, self-care, to be honest, because I think I haven't always cared about myself enough, and I've often directed sort of hatred towards myself. And so I suppose I've got better at it, and I've tried to learn ways to do that. And some of that is taking time out for myself and doing nice things for myself. So I think the feelings have got better. I think around the very immediate time after a miscarriage, they can be very intense. But I think at the moment, in this current week, I would say I'm a lot better with it. It comes and goes. I think I also beat myself up because, you know, society sort of makes us feel as though if our BMI is a certain number, then, you know, we're also bad people. And I'm sort of a bigger person. I'm very fit and healthy, but that's like who I am. I'm a curvy girl. That's just how it is. And I refuse now to believe that that is the reason for anything, because I know I'm fit and healthy. And I'm just trying always to push out those thoughts and to replace them with a good thought. It's hard, you get triggered. You know, yesterday I saw a great friend, the one who found out she was pregnant same time as me in the summer, and she's about to have her baby. And, you know, it's really hard, and I haven't got a bump and she's got a big bump, and it does make you feel those feelings start to come back in. But have to just remember, I am on my own journey, and I'm just going to get there a slightly different way, and that's okay. And I have lots of love and support around me, which is amazing and does help. But yeah, it's not easy. And sometimes I won't feel good about it. And sometimes I will compare myself, and then I have to try and stop those thoughts in their tracks, I guess. But yeah, it's just a constant work in progress, really.
Yeah, it is I think all of these things, I think we, as you say, there's so much about society that tells us what we should, and I put that in these things, what are they called? Inverted commas.
Yeah.
Whatever. What we should be doing and how we should be looking, and what age we should be doing things. And it's so hard to reject a narrative that we've basically grown up with.
Yeah.
And I think you're doing really well in even recognizing that that's what we need to do, because that's, for me, that's really hard. I think we put ourselves, naturally as women, we put ourselves at the bottom of the pile. And I think that self-care, and I say this a lot as well, so Laura will probably smile in a minute, but, you know, self-care is not about toweling robes and fluffy slippers and sparklers. And sometimes I put myself at the bottom of the pile without even really realizing that I have.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't realize until I'm sort of hitting burnout and feeling completely overwhelmed by life and not really knowing how to take care of myself. But, you know, for me, self-care is eating 3 times a day. It's
really
that simple, because sometimes I won't eat breakfast and I won't eat lunch, and I'll suddenly realize, you know, mid-afternoon, and I'll have a bowl of cereal, and then I won't be hungry at dinner time. So that's, and then I look back and I think all I ate was a bowl of cereal today.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, self-care for me is making sure that I've had three meals and making sure that I'm not on my phone at 11:30 at night, scrolling through Instagram and however funny, you know, these memes are, you know, that's not good for me. But self-care, I think, so often overlooked as luxurious and unnecessary, whereas actually you can't give anything to anyone unless you're replenished. And absolutely, my therapist that said that to me, she, you know, the old adage, you can't pour from an empty cup, is so true. Unless I have looked after myself, and I don't mean even like particularly like taken time off and gone and done this. I mean, like literally had three meals, got outside, done some exercise, drank some water, had a good night's sleep. That's basic stuff, but it's a stuff that we miss because we realize how important it is. And actually, if you're eating well and if you're sleeping well, you will find that life's problems feel more manageable. That's certainly my experience, is when I'm replenished with food, exercise and sleep, everything else feels a little bit more manageable. And it's not even like, oh, everything's easy today because I've done this. It's sometimes it's just like things don't feel as hard.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And, you know, obviously it's lovely to treat ourselves once in a while, but you have to have, you know, the basics there as well. And you're not going to do it every day, but at least if you can try and, like, sometimes just having a bit of a more of a routine and a bit more of a plan helps. I mean, it helps me. That's how I get through things. But and everyone's different. But yeah, it's so easy to miss all of that stuff quite easily.
Mm-hmm. I think we don't really realize what we need until we're doing it. It's working well. And I'm exactly the same. I need structure. I need routine, because else I do forget to do stuff. And I don't find it easy to fit everything in my life. But all I know is that when I'm organized, and I've like, even like doing a Tesco shop online, if I don't do that, and if I haven't done it, I'm then, you know, on the back foot before the week's even started. And the feelings of overwhelm and stress and anxiety just build up. And if I've at least done that one thing, A, it's made me think, okay, we've got food in the house the next few days. That's fine. I don't need to go to Tesco's anymore. B, in a really weird kind of basic way, it's made me think, I'm capable. I can do this. I can manage my life. I am capable of doing this. And it gives me a sense of pride and a little, not huge, like, oh, I did an online shop this week, guys. but you know, it just gives me that feeling of control of like, don't worry, you've got this. You've got this. Fine, we can get through this because we've done X, Y, and Z. We've prepared. And it's really helpful to kind of talk to yourself in that really gentle and forgiving way.
Well, absolutely, being gentle.
When you miss something or something goes wrong, just having the ability to kind of almost step out and go, look, it's just a da-da-da-da. We can sort this out, you know, and talking to yourself in the third person, be like, we're fine here. This is okay. We'll do this. This is the plan. This is what we're going to go do going forward. It's just been so helpful for me. But it's not every day. But when I can do it, it works.
Indeed. And exactly. You can't be in control of everything. And I think I'm a big controller. And so obviously this is hard because this is something I cannot control, this whole situation. But if there's just little things that I can be in control of, that helps enormously. And that's, I suppose, I recommend that as well, because there's always something that you can do for yourself that you can take a bit of control of, and that can be helpful.
Oh, Laura, that fits in perfectly with what you've always said, doesn't it?
What do I always say?
Control the controllables.
Yes.
There we go.
And I think when you're fobbed off at these appointments, you said about pinning all your hopes on these appointments. God, it's happened to me so many times.
I'm sure.
Right, we're going to get some answers. We're going to get a plan. And then you walk away feeling fobbed off. Once I got laughed at. And you just think, oh, you know, no one else is taking this seriously. So when you can, you know, by listening to podcasts or, you know, researching, when you can step out and explore another avenue and, you know, ask the questions to different people, it's just, well, life-changing. It's controlling the controllables, isn't it? Not letting the it will happen, just keep trying, it's just bad luck, because otherwise you're just going in blind again, doing the same thing, thinking, how the hell is it going to work this time when it didn't all those times before. Good for you, Rebecca.
Thank you for
stepping out and demanding to be heard and listened to.
Thank you. And just thank you to you guys, because I would, you know, I would say, as well as being life-changing, these podcasts are like life-saving for some people. I genuinely would say that. I've worked for the Samaritans quite a few years. I'm not at the moment because I found it, I needed to take a break with all this going on. But genuinely, I think people listening to things like this and helping them through these dark times is life-saving. So it is amazing. And the strength that it can give people is huge. And even if it can just, you know, remind something, oh yeah, I was going to get that checked, I'll go and do that. That is such a good thing. And I've had that so many times listening to your podcast and others. Oh yeah, I must just look at that and maybe that could help. I'll try that next time, you know. And it's just, it just gives you hope. And hope is important, because you never know what the end will be, but hope is still important, and trying to remain with a little bit of positivity.
Yeah, I think just, and you said this before, Laura, that living with that positivity and living with that hope, you don't know what's going to happen, but it makes life more bearable, because it makes life more enjoyable. If you can live your day-to-day life with a little bit of hope, finding joy where you can, it makes the ride, you know, more pleasant, doesn't it?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rebecca.
Thank you.
It's been lovely to chat to you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Our friend Charlotte always says, on the darkest days, I wear the brightest lipstick. And I think
I do that a lot.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You look great. And keep in touch. Wishing you so much luck for the new year.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And let us know how you get on. And just know that we're always here and we're absolutely 100% behind you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Look after yourself.
Take care, guys.
All right. Lots of love.
Bye. Bye.